This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. It's an eerily familiar story. First, there was one case, almost 3 months ago, back on May 7th.
Health authorities say a patient is being treated in isolation in London after being diagnosed with monkeypox. The UK Health Security Agency said the individual had recently travelled to Nigeria and is believed to have caught the virus before coming to England. It said monkeypox did not spread easily between people and the risk to the public was very low.
However, just 11 days later, on May 18th, the first cases were reported in Portugal, Spain, and in the United States. 4 days after that, May 22nd, while on an Asia trip, President Biden took this question at Osan Air Base in South Korea.
Mr. President, quick question. What have your health advisors told you your level of concern should be about monkeypox and the cases that are in the United States and around the world?
Well, they haven't told me the level of exposure yet, but it is something that everybody should be concerned about. We're working on it hard to figure out what we do and what vaccine, if any, may be available for it. But it is a concern in the sense that if it were to spread, it's consequential. That's all they've told me.
There are, in fact, two vaccines approved for monkeypox. The FDA approved them in 2019. But the very next day, Biden switched his messaging entirely, pivoting from concern to comfort. The U.S. has enough vaccine to, quote, deal with the likelihood of a problem, Biden said in Tokyo. Quote, I just don't think it rises to the level of concern that existed with COVID-19. Thus far, it doesn't seem to be a need for any kind of extra efforts beyond what's going on. End quote. Well, the disease spread. By June 16th, the U.S. passed 100 cases. As of yesterday, that number stood at 4,639. Worldwide, it's nearly 20,000. So over the weekend, the WHO declared monkeypox a global health emergency. But the Secretary General, Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, said there is still hope of containment.
This is an outbreak that can be stopped if countries, communities, and individuals inform themselves, take the risk seriously, and take the steps needed to stop transmission and protect vulnerable groups. The best way to do that is to reduce the risk of exposure. That means making safe choices for yourself and others.
Individuals may be taking the risk seriously, but our countries taking the risk seriously enough, specifically the United States. More than 2 months into the spread of this disease, many critics are saying no. The response here has been sluggish at best. This week may, though, mark a turning point. The Biden administration is weighing whether to declare monkeypox a public health emergency. And yesterday, the FDA announced its approval of vaccines made by the European manufacturer Bavarian Nordic. Health and Human Services Secretary Xavier Becerra lauded what he called the FDA's, quote, expedited inspection process. However, public health experts are wondering just what Becerra is talking about, because they believe the FDA was unnecessarily slow to act. Monica Gandhi is Division Chief of HIV, Infectious Diseases, and Global Medicine at the University of California, San Francisco.
There's bureaucratic hurdles to getting the Jynneos vaccine that have been criticized in the sense that the European CDC very quickly reviewed the vaccine in this Denmark plant, got out the vaccine, and even though the European CDC had already approved the production of the vaccine, we had to wait for the FDA to bless it. And so it really is, we're being stymied by our own kind of sluggish response to this. There's just too many bottlenecks, and it just doesn't make sense to me when it's spreading so quickly. We're now number one in terms of monkeypox cases worldwide.
This brings us back to the seeming familiarity of the monkeypox outbreak. Because COVID was supposed to be the wake-up call for American public health, there's also the world's prior experience with HIV/AIDS. Major mistakes were made with both diseases. Are some of those mistakes being repeated now? That's what we want to take a look at today. And we're going to start with Aaron Gettinger. He's a reporter for the Hyde Park Herald, a newspaper covering the south side of Chicago. And he started writing about monkeypox in late May, before Illinois had reported any cases of the disease. Aaron, welcome to On Point.
Greetings. Thanks for having me.
So first of all, why did you want to start reporting about monkeypox in late May?
Well, I'm gay. And anytime there's an outbreak of disease that's disproportionately affecting gay men anywhere that seems to be spreading through sexual networks, I figured that it was bound to eventually show up in big cities, and my big city especially. I was proven right. In Chicago, we've got something called the International Mr. Leather Festival, which is a great big kink and leather and BDSM conference at Memorial Day weekend. The initial monkeypox cases were tied to that event. But, in May is right next to June. That's Pride Month. And, I knew that queer people across the country were going to start congregating. Every city of any size has Pride events, and people were going to start socializing and having the intimate skin-to-skin contact one way or another that, spreads this disease. And this disease had gotten a stranglehold in, or a foothold in, this population. So I thought that it would be worthwhile to report out what public health authorities were going to do about it. Because I had a sense, a foreboding that it was going to happen. Of course. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, it's okay, Aaron, but you said something which actually I think is important to emphasize, that first of all, monkeypox is not exclusively a sexually transmitted disease, right? It is transmitted through skin-to-skin contact. I think that's actually, you said that, and I'm grateful because I want to emphasize that to people because it's important to know in terms of containment and public health response. So let's get to that. When you started asking around about what public health officials and authorities were doing to prepare for what you saw as the inevitable arrival of monkeypox, what did you find?
In Chicago, the Department of Public Health said, there's going to be a couple of cases. We expect that. The anticipation was that there would be an ability to vaccinate both the cases themselves as post-exposure prophylaxis, to limit the amount of symptoms that people were having, but then to also do a ring strategy to, vaccinate cases around them to be able to snuff out the vaccine or to snuff out the outbreak as it happened. Of course, what we've seen is that there have just been too many cases to be able to do that and not enough vaccine to be able to vaccinate people as they've come. I have been speaking to contacts in the Chicago Department of Public Health in Cook County, where Chicago is. They think that there are around 125,000 to 130,000 men who have sex with men. Of that, there are 50,000 immunocompromised men who are, HIV positive, or, men who have multiple partners. So that's 50,000 people who are going to need to be vaccinated in a worst case scenario. We don't have nearly enough vaccine to be able to immunize all of them in, the case that everyone needs to get immunized for monkeypox, which is what, seems to might be what needs to happen. Nobody's safe until everyone's safe right now.
Right.
And until everyone's safe, people need to take, non-pharmaceutical steps to protect themselves.
I also want to acknowledge that it's been a brutal couple of years for everyone in American public health. I mean, that is an inescapable fact. So I have some empathy, tons of empathy for public health officials. But at the same time, sounds like there was some overconfidence in the ability to respond to monkeypox once it arrived in Chicago. Now, do you mind if I just ask you briefly, you directly know what it's like to contract this disease. What's it like to get monkeypox? How does it feel?
Monkeypox is a nightmare. And I want to say it's not only, been exhausting for public health officials, it's also exhausting for just infectious disease doctors and frontline medical providers who are having to diagnose this too. You see it on their faces having to deal with this. Just from my own interviews with them, I want to acknowledge that at the same time. But yeah, I got monkeypox. I got monkeypox at the beginning of June. I have to think about whether or not my own reporting was psychodramatic at some level. Because I knew that I was at risk. I had lesions over a very sensitive part of my body. I've said that in I don't know how many interviews at this point. I had gotten a dose of vaccine before the symptoms started, again, because I'm plugged into public health networks the way that I am reporting on this in Chicago, before I had even known that I was exposed. And so I didn't get the, you know, terrible lesions that you see on social media and that kind of thing on, you know, my hands or my face or my, you know, anywhere else. But I was incapacitated for, you know, a day. I didn't get out of bed, but, you know, a week, my output journalistically was substantially reduced. And again, you have to take a 3-week isolation period. Today is my first day out of isolation in 3 weeks,
right,
in the middle of summer. Right. And Chicago doesn't get a very long summer. It's a shame, but I'm lucky. I get to work from home. People don't get to work from home who are going to be infected by this. It's terrible. And again, the pain is awful. It is the worst pain that I've experienced of anything medically in my life. And beyond that, we have to think about how this recuperation process and the isolation that it takes is going to affect the worst of us, or the least well off of us in society too.
Right. Well, Aaron, I know that I've got to let you go because you've got a lot more reporting to do. So Aaron Gettinger from Chicago, reporter for the Hyde Park Herald, a local newspaper on Chicago's South Side. Thank you so much for joining us today, Aaron.
Thank you for having me.
Also, I'm relieved to hear that you are on the mend. Well, we're talking this hour about the rapid spread of monkeypox globally and here in the United States, and whether we are seeing some similar mistakes that were made during the early days of COVID and why. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about the rapid global spread of monkeypox. And we are asking why that has happened, especially here in the United States, where for the past 2+ years, COVID was supposed to have been the wake-up call for public health and pandemic and epidemic preparedness in this country. Are similar mistakes being made already in respect to trying to control monkeypox? Now, like COVID, monkeypox has spread globally in just a matter of months. There's also another similarity to another disease, another global pandemic, HIV, because in HIV's early days, it was overwhelmingly affecting men who have sex with men. Similarly, with monkeypox, for now. So we spoke with Dr. Anthony Fauci. He's director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. He's, of course, also the chief medical advisor to the president. He first started treating AIDS patients back in 1981 and became the director of the NIAID in 1984. Fauci says the eerie, quote, eerie coincidence of another, albeit far less deadly disease, being monkeypox, hitting the gay community, actually gives the American health system an opportunity to do better this time.
So we want to get it right. We want to make sure that, A, there's no stigma associated with this, because, you know, the idea about reaching out into the community, outreach, there's this, you know, ambiguity and ambivalence about, like, if you start talking about being a disease predominantly among gay men, then all of a sudden the stigma returns. But if you don't do that, you're not being intellectually honest and getting the message to gay men, saying we got to be careful here.
But the prevalence among men who have sex with men is where the comparisons between monkeypox and HIV both begin and end. Because monkeypox, unlike HIV/AIDS, is almost 100% survivable. And perhaps more important, because monkeypox is related to smallpox, the United States has, in fact, a preparedness system already in place.
Just through unusual circumstances, in preparation for an outbreak of bioterror with smallpox, we happen to have developed tests, vaccines, and therapeutics. How do we get that equitably distributed in an expeditious manner to the people who need it?
But if there's a particular question screaming in your head right now, it's screaming in ours as well. If we are so prepared for a pox-related outbreak, why is vaccine distribution still a question in this country, especially after the nation went through the tumult of finding equitable and effective vaccine rollout plans for COVID? Well, Fauci says one reason is that one of the vaccines approved for monkeypox cannot be given to immunocompromised patients. The other, called Jynneos, can. In fact, hundreds of thousands of additional doses have been sitting in the U.S. since the beginning of July, but they could not be delivered to health authorities because the FDA hadn't inspected the approved the factory making the doses in Denmark, where the vials were filled. That approval, as I mentioned earlier in the show, it came only yesterday, meaning the release of some 780,000 doses now. But many more doses will be needed to contain monkeypox, and an additional 5 million doses won't be delivered until next year. That is too little, too late, according to many in the public health community. They say the delay has allowed monkeypox to spread beyond the possibility of containment. But that's an assessment that Dr. Fauci rejects.
I have to say, you know, I respectfully disagree with my colleagues that are so fatalistic. When you're in public health and you're trying to save lives, you never say something can't be stopped. You do everything you possibly can to stop it. If you really believe it's too late, then you forget about it and move on to another problem. I don't think anybody is suggesting that. So I would be careful with the pronouncements that it's too late. I think that may be just a manifestation of frustration of people thinking that more could have been done sooner.
That was Dr. Anthony Fauci. Well, joining us now is Dr. Ali Khan. He's dean of the College of Public Health and a professor of epidemiology at the University of Nebraska Medical Center. He was formerly director of the CDC's Office of Public Health Preparedness and Response. He served in that position between 2010 and 2014, and he's also author of the book, The Next Pandemic, on the front lines against humankind's gravest dangers. Dr. Khan, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show.
Hi, Meghna. Good to be back on again. And we need to stop meeting like this.
One day we're going to talk about something unrelated to infectious disease, and I welcome that day. But first of all, do you think that the moment to contain monkeypox has passed or not?
No, I don't believe the moment to contain monkeypox has passed. We have multiple tools in our prevention and control toolkit to help get this disease back under control. And if I may go back to an earlier comment you made, yes, we keep seem to hitting the snooze alarm when it comes to making sure that the United States is prepared for the next pandemic.
Well, so I think what I've been reading from some other public health experts is their fear that the moment to contain the disease has passed is coming from the fact that it's, you know, it's a zoonotic disease, right? But we usually consider zoonotic transfer in one direction, from animals to human. But the concern is that, you know, in places where monkeypox isn't already endemic, it could go back into animals, right, in those countries, including the United States, which would then perhaps make it endemic, allowing for animal-to-human transmission for the foreseeable future. Do you share that concern?
It's a potential concern. I mean, for example, plague is a disease that's not a native disease in the United States and established itself when it found a nice animal. But we've already had a monkeypox outbreak in the United States, much smaller, obviously. That was due to prairie dogs. And that did not establish itself as a zoonotic vector in animals here in the United States. So I think there's more than enough time currently to find people very quickly, make sure they get tested, make sure they get treated, make sure that they stay in isolation, and then make sure public health follows up with their contacts and those contacts are appropriately vaccinated. And a combination of these things will get the disease under control.
Those are all the solutions in the solution set for COVID too, but we couldn't even do that. We did not effectively roll out testing, treatment, isolation in this country.
That's quite true. Monkeypox, I recognize the comparison you're making to COVID and HIV, but currently there's less than 5,000 cases in the United States, and it's not as severe, fortunately, thanks to the health of the Americans who get infected, especially their nutritional health, based on my experiences working on this disease in Africa in the past, whereas for COVID, you know, 450 people are dying every day.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, so in terms of intensity and severity of the disease, you point well taken that they are not the same. COVID and monkeypox are not the same. Also, the method of transmission is not the same, right? It requires intimate skin-to-skin contact for monkeypox, whereas, of course, we now know very, very well with COVID, it's in the air, essentially. So is that one of the reasons why you're a little more sanguine than I expected, quite frankly, Dr. Khan?
Well, yes. You know me at this point, Meghna. I'm not a fearmonger. We need to be concerned but not panicked. And what we need to do is make sure that we tackle this with our eyes wide open. And we can talk later about the various data gaps that are out there and the robust public health workforce and public health systems we need. But mm-hmm. Correct, this disease requires actually quite intimate skin-to-skin contact. Most of it is, at this point, spread by sexual contact, although we do know that we have cases, for example, in two kids that were not sexual contacts. But we do have tools available to try to get this controlled.
Yeah. So, Dr. Khan, we're going to talk about what measures would be needed now to get containment, make containment a possibility. But I do want to use your considerable expertise to help us scrutinize what the administration's response has been thus far, from May, really, through to today. Because you said we keep hitting the snooze button. So let's go back to May. I read that quote from President Biden at the top of the show where, you know, on one day he was like, if monkeypox were to spread, it would be consequential. We have reason to be concerned. But then literally the next day, he completely changed his tune and said, there doesn't seem to be the need for extra efforts beyond what's going on. It doesn't rise to the level of concern. I mean, I'll be honest, that kind of flip-flopping in messaging seems very familiar from just a couple of years ago. I mean, what did that indicate to you that the president was kind of saying different things in the early days of monkeypox spreading?
I believe, and I can't speak for the president, obviously, I believe that the context was COVID versus monkeypox and the nature of our response and the nature of concern for the American people who had already been exhausted with the COVID response, to tell them, wait, there's yet another disease that can kill you, and it's fast spreading within our communities. That said, our initial response was sluggish and, to be honest with you, unforgivable. And we are so fortunate it was monkeypox, because if it was smallpox, we'd have numerous people dying currently if it had been a smallpox outbreak. And this is even more disappointing, as I said, because we already knew and have been training and stockpiling for a smallpox outbreak in the U.S. You know, why was there not adequate Bavarian Nordic vaccine within the United States? Why was there vaccine that had not been approved by FDA? I mean, we're supposed to be always ready at a moment's notice for a smallpox outbreak. That means that all these systems should have been ready and in place, including why was testing not rapidly scaled up by FDA to multiple commercial labs, which has happened now. I mean, you know, we're in a much better position today than we were at the beginning of this pandemic, but that response without a doubt was sluggish.
So many whys. These are, I mean, I know that you're not actually in CDC right now. You're not in the administration. You're not in FDA. We can't get answers from them. So do you dare speculate why? Let's start with FDA. I mean, you heard Dr. Monica Gandhi say earlier, well, you know, the administration might be lauding FDA for finally approving doses coming out of that Danish facility, but the Europeans had done it much more rapidly. I mean, do you have an explanation for, again, as you say, FDA's sluggish response?
No explanation. Again, we are supposed to be ready at a moment's notice for a smallpox outbreak in the United States. And that includes having adequate stockpiles of not just, we have lots of ACAM 2000, which was the reassuring message from the president that if this had been a severe disease, you know, a more severe version of monkeypox, then we could potentially use the other vaccine. But we're supposed to have had adequate stockpiles of this milder vaccine available for people exactly like this, who may have HIV, who may be pregnant, who may be, you know, very young in age. So why was that not ready? That should have been ready. That's a no excuse situation, as we frame it in public health.
Okay, and when you say why was that not ready, because again, the existing preparedness infrastructure was supposed to be, is for smallpox, a very, very, very serious disease, which you said, while officially eradicated, could still be used for bioterrorism. So
correct.
We should. So are you saying that like our existing infrastructure for preparedness infrastructure for smallpox is inadequate?
Well, obviously, this was a smallpox dress rehearsal, wasn't it? In many ways. No, it's clearly we've defined it's inadequate. I mean, the good news is that we do have sufficient vaccine for a smallpox pandemic, if it was truly smallpox. But if this was a dress rehearsal, it's not looking well.
Dr. Khan, I believe you're the first person I've heard who has said this is a kind of dress rehearsal for smallpox. That's a sobering thought, to be perfectly honest. Tell me more.
And it shouldn't surprise us. I mean, given what we saw with COVID, given what we've just seen with monkeypox, to do better, we need to dramatically transform the public health system as it currently exists. And that includes, for example, we talked about vaccine, you know, that's between the SNS and the FDA, diagnostics with the FDA. But let's not, you know, let's remember the good things, right? So I want to commend CDC. You know, one of the critical lapses that we saw during the original COVID outbreak was around messaging. And I think CDC has done a much better job at risk communication and community engagement than during the initial days of the COVID outbreak. I mean, they immediately reached out to the impacted community to work with that impacted community. They were very careful that this was skin-to-skin contact, including, you know, sexual contact tends to be pretty intimate, usually. So including sex, but not exclusively sex that causes this disease. So they were very careful in that messaging, not to stigmatize a community, but instead to engage that community. And now we're seeing very rapid deployment of guidelines that are coming out for people who are at higher risk, pregnant women, for example, people with HIV, for example. And I believe there's new guidance coming out from CDC on how to manage pain. And they also took this problematic system of getting the treatment TPOX. They've streamlined that to try to make sure that people can get treated. So there's a lot of good things that we saw immediately coming from CDC and continuing to coming from CDC around this response.
Okay, point taken. And I've also been hearing, though, that the initial messaging, there are some people who have a different view, that because it seemed to be communicated, monkeypox seemed to be communicated as CDC officials were talking about it in terms that made people think it was a sexually transmitted disease, where it's not. Was there a problem there?
people get this disease from sex. Most of these, you know, 95 to 99% of people get this from sex. That does not mean it's exclusively sexually transmitted, but you do need to be honest about how it is being transmitted.
Yeah. But I'm pointing it out because A, it's not exclusively transmitted, by sex. It can happen, as you affirmed, skin-to-skin contact. But also that, did it put people in the mindset that the outbreak should be treated like a sexually transmitted disease, whereas there are other, you know, other means for the transfer to happen? So maybe we're just sort of putting our public health minds in the wrong box, Dr. Khan.
And I would agree with you. CDC has been careful, much more comfortable with uncertainty than they've been in the past. The messaging includes, for example, besides close skin-to-skin contact, they tell you that there's theoretical possibility of this being spread by, you know, bed sheets, for example, that are contaminated with scabs, potentially spread by respiratory particles from individuals. So that's nice to see that greater uncertainty. But you're right, if you put yourself in the mindset that this is only via sex, that's disturbing. And that's problematic because we want people who think they may be infected to get tested. And we're seeing a great supply of testing, but no demand.
Dr. Khan, stand by for just a moment. We have to take a quick break, but there's a lot more we want to hear from you when we come back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we are talking about the spread of monkeypox globally and here in the United States. And we're trying to scrutinize this country's response so far because COVID was supposed to be the wake-up call for American public health. But are some similar mistakes being made now in the first couple of months of the spread of monkeypox as were made in the first couple of months of COVID? And not mistakes regarding the specifics of the diseases, because they are quite different, but in the shape and rigor of the public health response. I'm joined today by Dr. Ali Khan. He's Dean of the College of Public Health and a professor of epidemiology at the University of Nebraska Medical Center. From 2010 to 2014, he served as director of the CDC's Office of Public Health Preparedness and Response. He's got a long history at CDC, specifically in zoonotic and vector-borne diseases. He's traveled around the world fighting early outbreaks of diseases over many years. And all that experience came together in the book, The Next Pandemic, on the front lines against humankind's gravest dangers. Now, Dr. Khan, stand by here for just another second, because we did reach out to quite a few people, both in the global world of public health and also on the ground in specific communities. So first, to the WHO, we spoke with Dr. Rosamond Lewis. She's the WHO's technical lead on monkeypox. And she talked a lot about the continued importance, as always in public health, about high-quality, effective information, specifically still to the community of men who have sex with men. They need to know the signs of monkeypox, how to protect themselves and others. And the more that information and education gets out, the better their chances of containing the disease. And Dr. Lewis told us there is still a lot more that needs to be done on that communication front.
Despite every single effort to get information where it needs to go, including through social media apps, dating apps such as Grindr, social media, whether it's TikTok or Instagram or applications that are used by individuals and by community groups, despite that, of the 22 Pride festivals that were organized in this week, an assessment was made of their webpages. Only two of them had the information on monkeypox right on their organizational webpage. And so there are other factors that must be influencing the response that we need to get a handle on.
Now, as we heard earlier, when the outbreak first started, some communities, some places with a large gay community did begin looking to prepare, but the amount of vaccine available was sorely inadequate. Dr. Andrew Jorgensen is chief medical officer of Outer Cape Health Services in Provincetown, Massachusetts, a popular summer destination among gay men.
I remember being in close communication with leaders in the Department of Public Health. What that did was allow us to basically pre-position vaccine in Provincetown, knowing what could come soon. The state had a very limited supply, and I don't remember the exact numbers, something on the order of 100 doses of the vaccine, for which they sent 20 to Provincetown in anticipation of needing them for prevention for patients who may have been exposed to monkeypox.
Dr. Jorgensen says, though, that demand is massive in Provincetown. They have been flocking to vaccination sites.
One of the harder things for us was not to have to encourage people to get the vaccine, but having to ensure we have enough vaccine for the people who need it the most. And so that's why initially we had to be very, very careful about only providing the vaccine to people who had been exposed to a confirmed case of monkeypox. But working with the state, we quickly were able to expand that to people who, you know, had MSMs with multiple sexual partners, MSMs with exposures to areas where people with monkeypox had been.
So obviously still an ongoing gap between the demand and need for monkeypox vaccine and its availability. But hopefully in the coming weeks and months, that will change. But Dr. Khan, you had mentioned earlier about another gap, a data gap in this disease. What were you talking about? Tell me more.
So during the beginning of this outbreak, the initial diagnoses were really hindered by the requirement of completing a long form by clinicians and then getting the sample to a state laboratory for testing. And in diseases such as this, you need rapid diagnostics so you can tie them to treatment and obviously tie them to isolation and then contact tracing. So every minute, every hour counts. And this has to do with getting data available to CDC. And now we've had the admission by the CDC director, who said the quiet part out loud, that they don't have full data on who's infected in the state, how many people are infected, how many people are getting vaccinated. We don't have full data, for example, on how many people are tested with COVID, positive and negative. No full data on how many doses of TPOX were sent to what states, how much TPOX was used. No good data on those who were vaccinated, whether or not they subsequently got disease. I mean, there's all these data gaps that need to be addressed if we're going to be ready for the next pandemic, including a potential bioterrorism event.
I keep pausing, Dr. Khan, because what you're telling me, I hate using this
it
word.
It should scare you.
I find it outrageous and baffling.
Correct. It should outrage you too. I agree. And baffle you.
But why is this happening, though? Because, look, governmental institutions are big. They can be unwieldy. Bureaucracy is bureaucracy. I get it. But there must be something deeper here, because one of the last times you came on the show, in the first year of COVID, we talked about then how the CDC for a long time was literally the gold standard around the world for exactly what you're talking about. Its ability to gather data rapidly, to track the spread of disease, right? And yet, what has happened underneath that? It feels like CDC, FDA are kind of, they're decrepit institutions that aren't even able to do what they once were able to do.
That may be a little unkind. These are amazing scientists in these organizations, but they need an ASPR. Remember, ASPR now is the group that's responsible for those vaccine issues, and HHS. The whole public health preparedness, the health security preparedness system in the United States needs a redo. We did this after 9/11. We should have done this after COVID. It was after 9/11 that we created a Directorate of National Intelligence. I believe we need to do the same thing instead of creating a brand new czar every time we have another pandemic, which we will have another one, trust me. And then about making sure we have that robust workforce that we need within state and local health departments, including the commitment by the states, right? This is a federation. States are responsible for health. State legislatures need to be writing those big checks to their public health entities, not just the federal government. And then the systems, including data systems. I mean, it's disturbing to me that Google knows more about my health than CDC knows about my health.
Wow. Well, is there another sort of corollary issue here in terms of the lack of preparedness that you are clearly describing? And because, look, we have a history of also perhaps as a nation not really placing as much focus on diseases that we think will never arrive on these shores, right? Was this another moment where it's like, oh, monkeypox is an endemic African problem, so why bother?
Correct. And I hope we've moved to that point where we realize a disease anywhere is a disease everywhere. We are at risk for the next coronavirus outbreak. We are at risk for the next influenza outbreak, which is what really keeps me up at night. And until we're willing to dramatically transform our public health system and make sure they have the political support to do so, as you know, over the last 2 years, in many ways, we've been undermining public health and public health systems and officials, and they need the political support to make sure that we are ready as Americans for the next pandemic. And, you know, I'll give you, forget about the next pandemic. Let's talk about the one we still have. You know, 450 deaths a day of a vaccine preventable disease for which we have good diagnostics and good therapeutics, by the way, called COVID, right? Why is that? That's a symptom of what's going on in public health.
Okay. So just to be clear, do you think at least some of the same missteps have been made with monkeypox, again, even though it's biologically a different disease, that were made in the initial response to COVID?
Oh, absolutely. Many of the same missteps were made in terms of how the response was coordinated and organized, the lack of preparedness in terms of having vaccine ready to go, data system gaps. So, many of the same things that we saw during the COVID response, we saw. So, again, lack of testing, no sense of urgency, right, is probably the best way I can frame that.
Okay, so let me, again, lean on your experience being, you know, in CDC at quite a high level. Let's do a little a thought exercise here. Let's say you in your former CDC job were in a room with the CDC director, and you had just come back from, I don't know, the UK, where the first outside of Africa monkeypox case was identified, and you were trying to tell the CDC director, we need to take this seriously. This is different than previous monkeypox outbreaks in Africa. What do you think would you need to say in order to convince the director to take it more seriously?
So that's correct. This is different, right? Traditional monkeypox is usually a disease of rope squirrels that infects people who hunt them. And this is more person-to-person spread, likely going on for the last 4 to 5 years. But I think it's unfair to pick on the CDC director, right? Because I've just given you examples where the issues lied in ASPR with the SNS and with FDA. Mm-hmm. So
pick any one of them.
What you need to do is pick them all together, right? You need
to say, put them all in a room. Yeah.
Put them all in a room and say, because we're seeing this going on in Europe, you should expect cases on your own doorstep. And not only should you expect them, they're probably already here and you're not looking for them. And so what do we need to do to make sure we immediately scale up testing nationwide through commercial laboratories, given our amazing scientific and manufacturing expertise here in the United States? And what are we doing to make sure that our messaging is correct? And what are we doing to make sure that there's mandatory reporting from states? What are we doing to support states so that they have the people to do the mandatory testing? I mean, there's a lot of work that can be done, should have been done immediately when new cases were being seen in Europe.
Yeah. You know, I just want to acknowledge that I'm not trying to beat up at all on individual scientists. They have done heroic work over the past couple of years. But I am concerned about sluggishness in, you know, from leadership's response, because the buck does stop with them. It does. And so, you know, I'm trying to put myself in the mindset of CDC director, FDA, the White House, what have you, and just wondering why there wasn't, at least as far as the public could see, a more rapid, organized, efficient response. I mean, could it possibly have been because, like, okay, well, we're going to be a little more relaxed about it because it's not a respiratory disease? I mean, what are the things that prevent better decision-making when it comes to infectious disease control, Dr. Khan?
I think we need better interagency coordination and organization than we currently have, and I think we need a different response structure for the U.S. for these large outbreaks. As I said, you know, the DNI model that we used after 9/11, and I would, you know, COVID-19 is the public health version of 9/11. To think about how is our public health response structured in the United States to make sure we have a response across every agency in cooperation and collaboration with state and local health departments. And again, we need to do that hard work of that full scale transformation of public health as we currently know it in the United States. And this goes not just for infectious diseases, right? And I can give you my lens as a public health practitioner and dean of a college of public health is when I look at life expectancy in the United States compared to other countries, and I go, you know what? There's so much of this that's preventable if we would invest in public health.
Yeah. Okay.
And so prevention.
My mind is going back to what you said about 20 minutes ago in the show about, you know, because monkeypox is a relative of smallpox. Fortunately, monkeypox is nowhere near as lethal as smallpox. But you called this a dress rehearsal for our preparedness and response to smallpox. I mean, you're saying that we should be ringing alarm bells about inadequate preparedness for that, right? I mean, I feel like, do you have the phone number for someone at the White House that you could talk to? Because I would love to them to hear you say that. What needs to be done to shore up our smallpox preparedness then?
And again, the COVID was similarly a wake-up call, unfortunately a very deadly wake-up call for our response for the next pandemic due to a novel influenza strain. We remain at risk for these new pandemics. And until we're willing to make the investments that are needed and the legislative changes. For example, we don't have a national health identifier. So there's all sorts of things that can be done immediately to have an impact and that need to be done.
Okay, so what would you do? And I don't know if this lies outside the area of your expertise, Dr. Khan, but let's say for vaccine rollout, right? If we ideally had an adequate supply of vaccine for a rapid rollout for smallpox, do we have the system in place for that rollout?
Our state and local health departments have been practicing for years for a large-scale rollout that would be needed for a smallpox outbreak in the United States. And that system was practiced again with the COVID when they had initial responsibility for getting out COVID vaccine. So again, we're making incremental improvements, and I want to be kind to the public health people who have been under stress for the last 2 to 3 years because of this pandemic. But we really need to bolster public health, bolster their efforts, make sure there's enough trained people in the workforce who can do this, and that they have the systems at their hand to do what needs to get done around information.
I just wonder how many more wake-up calls, dress rehearsals, and reminders we need before the nation really starts adequately reinvesting in public health. Well, Dr. Ali Khan, Dean of the College of Public Health and Professor of Epidemiology at the University of Nebraska Medical Center, and author of The Next Pandemic, On the Front Lines Against Humankind's Gravest Dangers. Dr. Khan, my deep gratitude to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, and thank you for the insightful questions.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.